All right, and we are back, folks. So let's see. I think had just finished discussing your early experiences with Dogman, Bettina, and you were talking about your first encounter, which was pretty traumatic, and then finding a tree that had possibly where the Dogman was staying, and you had some other encounters, and you want to tell us about that?
Yes, so after that day, after having that sighting that day, I don't think that I can't remember now, but I don't think I started recording and taking pictures right away after that. I think it took me some time listening to more encounters on YouTube on different podcasts before I actually felt comfortable enough to start taking pictures or going outside to record, or even before I ever went to those woods. Prior to that, I really wasn't going into the woods. I've been back there as a kid before, but we're playing and just exploring the woods, but I never took the time to go back there for any other reason or nature walk or anything else. But years, maybe probably a few months to a year later, that's when I started, because I knew that if I saw that one, that there's got to be more back there. There can't just be that just one and only dog man. I felt like that out of all the encounter shows that I heard, I felt that basically they're always hiding behind trees. They're there a lot of times that you don't even know about because you don't see them, you don't hear them. They're able to remain completely still to the point they're not moving at all, they're not making any sounds. And I just felt like, if that's the case, if they're hiding in the trees a lot of people don't see them a lot of the times. And like I mentioned earlier when we talked, I mentioned the fact that a lot of hunters or people who camp or go fishing or any woods activities, hiking, they'll say, "Well, I've been in the woods all my life and I've never seen anything out there." Well, one of the reasons behind that is because you're not looking up, you're not looking in the trees, you're hunting, and whatever you're looking for, you're usually looking for on the ground. So a lot of people don't see them because of that. Plus, they're also able to blend in with their surroundings. So after that first encounter, when I did start recording and taking pictures, I would do it, of course, in the daytime. And I started recording so many of them. A lot of the times when I'd be outside, I would be sitting under the carport, like I was telling you before, because pretty much there's between the carport and the fenced in backyard, then behind the fenced in backyard, that's where the field is. That is the beginning also of the wood line. And there's one particular spot, like I would always sit on this big, huge, I don't know, call it like a big toy chest or just a big chest that they had out front, outside of their front door, big rectangular shape. I would sit out there and smoke and just, record the trees, nature, and all that kind of stuff. But I was looking for dog man. I felt that at any point, that if that one was out there that night, and dog men are curious as people say they are, then at some point, whether it's today or the next day or the day after that, at some point I'm going to capture them on camera. Plenty of times we're probably being watched. We don't even know it. I think at that point, I'm not sure if I knew yet. I don't think I heard this until later on, but I've heard before. I think after that, the dog men are attracted to, and I'm not sure about Sasquatch, but I have heard that dog men are attracted to tobacco smoke or tobacco. So now, looking back at all the other sightings that I had of dog men after the first one, I realized that every time that I would be out there, I was out there smoking, whether it be day or night. The way
That's
it
very
changed.
interesting
Okay, go ahead.
because just that's very interesting because, of course, tobacco was one of the traditional sacrifices that the Native American people made to their gods. It's just, it's a very common sacrifice
I didn't
of,
know that.
oh yes, and that they would make that sacrifice to supernatural entities. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know. Maybe there's a connection there. I don't know.
I definitely think it is. Through the years listening at a bunch of these different dogman encounters, even some of the eyewitnesses that I've actually interviewed myself, a lot of them would say, well, you know, I was sitting out on the front porch smoking, or I was taking a smoke break, or I was out in the barn or hiding behind the barn smoking, anything like that. You will hear a lot of these cases where dogmen are around or watching, or people have had an encounter when they're smoking. And I don't know, I'm thinking that part of that could be because of examples like you just said, it's an offering, whatever it does for them. But what it means to me is that the reason I think so many people are out there smoking, that could be one example, what you just gave. But another thing is I think that smokers, if you don't smoke in the house, you're outside a whole lot more probably than the average person. You go out.
That's true too. Yes. Yeah.
You're outside more. I don't smoke, like even now, like I don't smoke in my place. I don't, I smoke in the car, which I shouldn't be, but smoking in the car, like you're still outside. So a lot of motorists or whatever, you know, a lot of the time, and if you're parked somewhere in a park or wherever you are, shaded area, wooded area, then they're still smelling that. So when you just put the correlation together, I do know that I started going into those woods. I've been back there probably a total of maybe four or five times since I had that first encounter in 2013. Now, when I would sit on that toy box right there under the carport, what I would see a lot of the time, one particular occasion, I saw one that I call the German Shepherd or Anubis Dogman, is the characteristic profile of what is usually explained of Dogman, which is Black German Shepherd or Anubis, or a Doberman Pinscher with the elongated snout and the 20 triangular ears that stick straight up. That particular one I have captured on camera a total of, I'm gonna say at least two or three times.
Wow.
It always like to watch. Now, the interesting thing about that picture is that I'm not at the woods, I'm not in the backyard, so I never heard it brought up and going to that exact position where it was standing behind the trees, the leaves of the tree watching. I never saw it run up and just appear there. They're, for whatever reason, they're able to remain completely silent, so I don't know if it manifests there or what, but I saw it watching, and when I saw that, I started recording. I actually saw it before I started recording and taking pictures. So the interesting thing about that is that, I was out there that day. Sometimes I'd be out there for an hour. Sometimes it might be 2 hours. Just enjoyed nature and I enjoyed recording. But that whole time it was watching me and I was watching it, it didn't move.
Wow.
It did move, but not when I was looking at it. I captured movement on it because after I took several pictures consecutively back to back, the first picture I took, it was looking straight ahead, like directly. So the snout appeared to be a lot broader. And you could see both ears on top of the head. You could see the head. I can't remember the upper shoulder area. I do have the picture and I'll share those with you. But
yes, please.
You could see that one of the eyes, you could see the eye that's on my, it wasn't its right eye, it's its left eye, but I'm thinking about it because I'm looking straight ahead at it. So you could see the eye on the right side, which was his left eye. The other eye, you could partially see it, but not really because the way the sun was shining through the trees and the way it was positioned behind that particular tree, the leaves that it was in front of was partially covering the other eye. So, but later on, going back to look at those pictures that I took consecutively, I noticed that on one of the pictures that it was no longer looking straight ahead. It's now tilted its head at an to the side, kind of like a dog was, like a dog does when they're curious about something, when they're trying to figure out something. So at that point, it had more of the snout didn't appear as broad because you're not looking at it straight on. Now it looked kind of a lot more narrow. You could still see, I think at this point, you could see both eyes a little bit more on that picture as well. They never approached. They never showed any form of aggression. They just watched. From a safe distance. At any point, they could have jumped over that fence or ran around the fence and came up there on the carport where I was, or could have done anything. But this was broad daylight, so I don't see them just running out there in broad daylight. There's other houses, people, you know, sometimes might be outside. Other neighbors that my parents had would sometimes, they actually sat on their porch a lot during the daytime. The lady's husband across the street from my parents, he was a smoker, so he'd be out there sometimes at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. But at that point in time, I never told him or his wife about the things that were back there. But on the one particular picture of the one I call the Anubis German Shepherd dog man, there's others also in that picture. There's some juveniles in there and a baby also.
Wow.
So they actually showed themselves. They stayed there. And at certain points, when you're looking for these things in the picture, you want to look for the darkest thing in the picture, something that, and I understand that there's shadows in the pictures and the trees and all that kind of stuff when you're looking, but it's not going to be something that stands out so much that you can mistake it for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. I think I've been on your site quite a bit. I can see exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So they actually, so it just depends. I think you had asked me about if I ever felt any fear with that first one.
Yes.
It was not so much fear. It was more shock than anything. Even though I knew that they existed, I was still shocked because I never expected that.
Nobody does.
Yeah. But after that night, after seeing that night, I wasn't as free to feel comfortable to go outside of the house at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night when I was spending the night at their house on weekends. I wouldn't just go out there and just sit in the car and smoke. Or if I did, I would make sure that the doors were locked and I would make sure I only let the windows down only so much. I didn't want to let it down too much in case they came. I don't know. It just made me paranoid, but it changed the way I did things. If I had to go out to the car for any reason to get something out of the car, then I would have my dad to come up and, you know, I'd say, stand here, watch at the door. Do not walk away from the door. Watch me the whole time until I get back to the house.
Yes. I certainly don't blame you. Just a couple of things. I had some questions written down. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget to ask you.
Okay.
At the time that you were seeing Dogman, were you having any other, like, kind of high strangeness, any like poltergeist activity, any strange lights, any weird dreams, anything else going on in your life?
Not at that time. Well, hold on. I say not at that time, but I did, and I was still married at the house. There have been a few things that were kind of somewhat paranormal, supernatural that were happening at the house, starting around 2010, 2011. I started having sleep paralysis regularly before ever having the encounter.
Really?
I've had that since probably around 2004, it comes and goes. And then around 2017, I stopped having it as much. I had reached out to, I think it might have been before 2017, but I reached out to somebody who does deliverance and they were able to help me to stop having that. But here lately, it has started up again. But at that time, my stepson was scared to go to sleep at night with the we had to leave the hall light or the bathroom light on over on that side of the house. And at one point, my husband at the time, he said, hold on, I'm sorry, can you?
No problem. Shall we pause for a moment?
Okay, I'm good now. So my husband at the time, he was just like, well, don't forget, I know you try to cut all the lights off in the house. I didn't say anything to you about this, but you know, my son, basically, he doesn't want the lights off over there on that side of the house at night. So he said, make sure we leave the hall light on or the bathroom light. Or, you know, I think at one point he ended up putting a nightlight in the hallway and a nightlight in his room. I'm like, this is ridiculous. He's 10 years old. Why is he afraid of the dark? I said, tell him to man up. And he, I said, what is he afraid of? He said, I don't know, but I didn't ask him. I said, well, why would you not ask him? Because if something that makes him afraid, then I don't want to bring it up to make him even more afraid to talk about it. But one day he didn't want to talk to him about it. And I said, well, if you don't talk to him about it, I'm going to. He said, no, leave it alone. But curiosity got the best of me, and I asked him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he told me he saw two males. He said, I saw two white males standing in the doorway watching me. I said, well, were you dreaming, or were you, had you been asleep and you just maybe, you know, your eyes are playing tricks on you? Or he said, no, he said, I was just sitting up like I'm sitting on the floor right now. He said, I was just playing my PlayStation. I said, well, what did they look like? He gave me a description what they look like. And I said, well, did they say anything to you? Did they have a message for you? Did they smile, or what happened? He said, they nothing. He said, they just stood there and watched.
Wow.
He never told me if they walked away after that or if they disappeared. At that same point in time, my mother-in-law was there at the house visiting, and she had been there for about a month. And one morning I got up to go in the kitchen to fix me some lunch for the day to take to work with me. And she's diabetic, so she was in the kitchen that same day. And she told me, and she called me Tina. She said, Tina, you said, you know, this morning, she said either early this morning or this morning, she said, a beautiful angel came and appeared to me in the bedroom. And I said, well, you know, and at the same time, I've been having sleep paralysis on a regular basis. So I figured, okay, this might be a demon. So I'm going to test this. But I said, did she say anything to you? Because I know anytime angels came and appeared to people in the Bible, they always came as to send a message or to give people a message of God. Like, they didn't just come to just show up to for you to glorify them. So I said, what did she say to you? And she said, she didn't say anything. She just descended down out of the ceiling, and she just gave it a description of how beautiful her dress was. And she said she didn't say anything to her. She just stood there and smiled at her. She said, I just felt a peace come over me. She said that was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And when she said that, I was like, oh my God, no. And I got terrified, because anybody who in the paranormal world knows that 3 o'clock in the morning, I think 12 a.m. to like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, is they call like the witching hour.
Oh yes, especially like around 3:30. Yeah, I've heard that many times.
And she didn't have dementia. I asked her, it didn't say anything to her, but I know biblically speaking as a Christian, I know that he said that the spirits, whatever, can manifest themselves as an angel of light. So I looked at all that. I looked at the time. I looked at the fact that my stepson was seeing things in the house. She had this angel to come down at 3 o'clock in the morning, didn't have a message for her, anything like that. And then it just, the same way it descended down out of the ceiling, it ascended the same way. And so I had told myself that day, tonight when I get home, I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask your God to reveal to me, was this a demonic spirit pretending to be something else? I said, and so that night I did pray, and I prayed and I asked for that. I said, I want to know, was this an angel of light? Was this a demonic spirit that appeared and came in as a good thing? Or was this really an angel that you sent? Because you know that in the Bible, most of the angels, all the angels that have ever been recorded or talked about, have been male angels for one.
Yes, I was thinking that very same thing, that in the Bible, there are no winged women that they mm-hmm. paint in the paintings. That's not in the Bible, no.
Absolutely. So all of those things made me question that. And when I prayed, I said, God, I said, I don't want, you know, I know it's going to be a fearful thing, but even if it has to come through the form of sleep paralysis, that entity that appeared to her or before her, I want to know, was this an angel that you sent, or was this something else? Was this a demon? And so that very night, after I got through praying, I started to drift off into sleep. And I actually had also said, even if it comes in the form of sleep paralysis, if it comes in the form of sleep paralysis, then I know it's demonic. Mm-hmm. Some people might debate that, because some people embrace sleep paralysis and lucid dreaming, but I don't, because all of my experiences with sleep paralysis have always been negative or evil or demonic. So that very night when I prayed, I hadn't even had my eyes closed long. Sleep paralysis got ready to start right away. I could feel it entering the room. And I told myself that night, after I knew what sleep paralysis was, I decided, because my husband had told me, well, you're making this stuff manifest. You research all this different stuff. You can't expect that something's not going to happen or not going to appear before you. And he was kind of telling me it was all in my head. He said, so I don't really think there's anything to it. So I had prayed. And when I prayed, I also had told myself that night, this time I'm not going to pray. I'm going to see what happens during the sleep paralysis. I'm not going to pray and stop it like I usually do. I want to see how far this goes if I don't do anything about it once I realize that it's in the room. That was a terrible mistake, because that night was the first time that it took a long time to get it to go. That was the first time I think I'd ever been pinned down to that degree, to the point where I could actually feel myself being, I could feel myself sinking into the mattress. You know how you can feel like you put somebody maybe 600-700 pounds and like the mattress starts to like sink down?
Yes, yes.
Did you ever see that movie, Friday, the earlier movies, the Friday 13th, I think maybe that first one. And I think, what was her name? Heather something. I can't remember her name right now, but in that movie, there was a person who started to sink down into the mattress and be dragged into it, into like a whole nother dimension. So that was in my head, and I got terrified, and it took a whole lot of prayer once that started to get that thing to leave the room and get off of me.
So when you had sleep paralysis, there were always entities that you saw that like came and touched you, or like they were, you could see them? Like they were, you know, evil beings that came into your room? I ask because, you know, some people have sleep paralysis of different kinds. Mm-hmm. And some just kind of wake up and can't move and go back to sleep. And others have really intense encounters. And go ahead.
Yeah, mine were very intense. I didn't always see something. I've had multiple sleep paralysis experiences from 2004 up to, I'm going to say up to this year, because I did get them to stop for a few years by reaching out to the guy I told you about before, who was a deliverance minister. He actually helped me to overcome that, and it stopped for several years. But during the very first sleep paralysis experience, I didn't see anything, but I felt its presence. I could hear its footsteps. And this is while my parents were still living in that same house where I had all these dogman encounters, but the dogman stuff had not started happening yet. But they had a coffee table that was in the, like, right in front of the couch. I had fallen asleep on the couch that night, and I basically heard footsteps running around the coffee table. But before I heard all that, that night, before the sleep paralysis ever started, I'd heard scratching on the wall. Like, they had those old paneling walls from back in the 70s and 80s. You remember
that?
Oh,
yes. Oh, I certainly do.
And the fingernails were scratching on the wall. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, this is before I went to sleep that night. I'm late watching TV. And I just kind of blew it off. And I was like, what is that? We didn't have any pets in the house or anything. I kept trying to rationalize it, and it kept going for so long that I said, okay, I tried to tell myself that's electrical noises from the refrigerator or the TV or something. But then after it kept going, I got up and went over to where I heard it. There was nothing there. And I had this feeling of, somewhat of a feeling of, when you can't make sense of it or rationalize it, like, what do you do now? Like, I ended up finally sitting back on the couch and laying down, going to sleep. And then after I went to sleep, I don't know how much time had passed after that, whether it was a few minutes or a few hours or the next morning early, but I started to have a dream. I started out as a dream first, and then it transitioned from a dream over into where I could hear scratching on the wall in the sleep paralysis, just like I did right before I went to sleep. At this point, like, whenever I'm afraid during a bad dream, I'll just, you know, you can wake yourself up from a regular dream. You don't like what's happening, you can wake up. But I decided I want to wake up. I realized at that moment when I decided that you can't move. I can't get up. I wanted to talk. I couldn't toss and turn. I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, I felt an evil presence in the room. And when I say that, it was like in a really oppressive feeling, something evil, something that hated me with like the deepest hate, more so anything worse than what you can even imagine, like a human hatred for you, something that would be evil, diabolical, or demonic. You feel its hate. You can feel it. It resonates into you. You can feel that hate. And I felt that. And I knew that there was something else in that room. I could feel it. Then I heard footsteps running around the coffee table because they had hardwood floors. And I knew it started at the end of the coffee table where my feet were. And it was running from that end around the coffee table, coming around to where my head was on the couch. And I kept screaming to myself, telling myself, wake up, get up, get up, get up, wake up. And I just kept telling myself to wake up because I told myself, when it gets over here, it's going to grab you by the neck and it's going to start choking you. And I'll say this because I've forgotten, left this part out. This is the first time I had an out-of-body experience too. So this wow. night when sleep paralysis was happening, even though I couldn't see the entity yet that was in the room, I could see my body laying there on the couch because I don't know what to call it other than that, but my spirit was out of body and my back is to the ceiling and I'm floating up or I'm levitated or hovering at the ceiling, looking down at my body laying on the couch. I could see everything in the room. I could see the napkin that was dropped on the floor. I could see everything that was on the table. Everything was exactly like it was. Even, you know, it's not like a regular dream. You're not going to dream about everything exactly like it
is.
No. I could see a strand of hair going across my face. One pant leg was rolled all the way up to the knee. The covers was disheveled. Everything was exactly the same as it was in real life. So, I said, please get up, get up. So I seen all this, but I couldn't see the spirit, but I knew it was one in there. It ran around when it got to the part, like of the coffee table, came around to the couch where my head was, it grabbed me by the neck and started choking me. Now, at this point, I didn't know what sleep paralysis was, but I remembered that several years ago, during my teenage years, I think I might have been about 14. I spent the night with my best friend at the time. And we were talking one day. And out of the blue, she just said, has the witch ever rode your back? I said, the what? She said, has the witch ever rode your back? I said, well, what is that? She said, it's when you go to sleep at night and a witch or something like that comes and holds you down. You can't scream. You can't move. You can't get up. You can't do anything about it. And I had not had anything like that to happen in my teenage years. I didn't know what she was talking about. It was weird. It kind of creeped me out, but I didn't think anything else about it. But then... So what ended up happening next after it was choking me in my mind at this point, I'm telling myself, you're getting ready to die. It's going to kill you. I knew it was something there. It was just invisible. The most interesting thing that let me know that that was a real experience, because I'd never had this happen before, was that, and I want you to picture this. So where this happened was in the den. We called it a den back then. I think I call it a great room now.
Sure.
But there was a separation between the den and the kitchen, you know, a little opening there. But my parents had those saloon doors that separated the kitchen from the living room. So the next thing I see while my spirit is hovering up there, so my spirit is hovering at the ceiling as all these things is happening to me. The next thing that happened, the saloon doors opened. My dad walked in the room and said, Tina, time to get up. Time for you to go to work. You're going to be late. And he stood there for a few minutes and was like, trying to make sure I would get up. He said, Tina, get up. You're going to be late for work. And while he's saying this, I want to get up, but I can't. My spirit's not in my body, for one. Number two, this thing is choking me. And so after that, Daddy turned around and walked out of the room and went back to the back of the house. It took a few minutes before my spirit finally got back into my body. But when it did, I slowly came to, I was able to sit up. I sat there on the couch for a few minutes, like, what the hell just happened to me?
I bet, yeah.
Now, what made me know, I said, was that a dream? I said, it couldn't have been a dream. It's too real. I said, it's not right. I couldn't even get back in my body, and my spirit was up there. That's weird. So at that point, I finally got up off the couch, and I said, let me go back there to Daddy's room. Let me go back there and see, because he walked in there. He had on a red T-shirt. So I walked back to the room, knocked on my parents' bedroom door. And when Daddy opened the door, he had on a red T-shirt. I said, did you just come in there and tell me, get up, it's time for me to go to work? He said, yeah, because you know you need to be up now. You got to go to work. So that day was the first time I had sleep paralysis. So yeah,
wow. There's
been a history of stuff happening. Yes, I have been scratched before. I have been had it rub my arm before. During one sleep paralysis incident I had at my aunt's house, sleep paralysis happen again, not too long after the first one, and I could actually see the demon that was standing at the foot of the bed. It was, snarling, it was baring, showing its teeth at me. It was really white, pale, pasty. It kind of looked like, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, 13 Ghosts. If you hadn't Googled
it. I have, yes. I've seen it a couple times.
You remember that fat, white baby ghost that was with the old woman?
Oh, yes, yes, exactly. I think they call him the evil child or something.
Yes, it looked like that, and it had sharp
points.
I hadn't seen that movie at that point yet. I don't think that movie had even come out yet. Uh-huh. But I saw that. It was something that looked like that at the foot of the bed, and it had pointy, sharp teeth. I'm in sleep paralysis. And I'm looking at it, and it's looking at me. During this time, I don't think that this is one of the times that sometimes, I think that might have been, I'm going to put it to you like this. Most of my sleep paralysis, if not all, my eyes were closed. I feel like the reason that for the times that I did see what was in the room, I think that what's really seeing these beings is you are now in the spiritual realm when you have dreams and nightmares. That stuff is real. You're just in another dimension. You're in the different realm of reality. So my eyes were closed. So I'm thinking I saw it through the third eye or my spirit or my mind's eye. But I always, for the ones that showed themselves, yeah, I saw that one.
Wow, and it was, that is a really horrible image to see.
Very. That's just one of them. The other one that I saw, after that was years later. This one was at the house I used to live in with my ex-husband. There was one night sleep paralysis started, and the bedroom, it didn't come through the bedroom door this time. It came out of the bathroom. The bathroom light was off. It was dark. And I saw the spirit as she walked out. If you've seen the movie The Grudge before, real
white, oh, yes.
Pasty, black, sunken eyes, scraggly black hair, long, dingy white.
Wow.
That walked out of the bedroom. She was very tall. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I couldn't get up. That same feeling of evil that was always present whenever I had any sleep paralysis experiences was there then. And at this point, I remember thinking in my mind, because you can still think and you can still talk in your head. I kept saying to myself, please, God, don't let her see that I can see her right now. Because in my mind, I feel like if she doesn't know I can see her, then maybe she won't bother me. But I couldn't make myself get up. I couldn't do anything about it. But I finally, when you try to talk when you have sleep paralysis, it's almost like if you could picture somebody trying to talk, they had a stroke. It's like that mumbled, garbled type of, you can't talk. It's trying to prevent you from praying. It doesn't want you to. So she did realize that I saw her, and she stopped doing that slow zombie, slow motion walk that she was doing and started to slowly turn and face the bed and walk to my side of the bed. I was able to end that sleep paralysis right before she got to me.
Wow. I noticed one thing. With the sleep paralysis entities, you can clearly feel an evil presence.
Mm-hmm.
With the dog men, it doesn't seem like that. Would that
now
be right? I don't know.
For me, for the dog men that I've witnessed, I didn't feel an evil vibe from them. But I'm not one of those people that's naive enough to believe that all dogman experiences or encounters are created equal. There's a lot of encounters out there, and I've listened to several hundred, probably, to be honest with you, probably thousands of them over the last few years from 2013 to now, where people did feel an evil presence from them, where they did say that it felt like it was looking straight into their very soul. It felt like they were being, like hypnotized by the eyes, or times when they've been tapping on people's windows and trying to lure them outside. So there's been several different cases where people have had evil type of stuff or nefarious things.
Oh, yes.
Do. So, yeah, I do feel like that there is something about them that can appear that way. I do feel like that if they are spiritual beings, because I believe they're flesh and blood and paranormal at the same time, I feel like that maybe some people have a certain veil of protection around them. My parents were very religious and very spiritual, and they kept a cloak of protection around their home.
Wow.
So I feel like that I was protected because of that. So, yeah, I do believe that there's bad ones and negative and evil ones out there too.
Oh yeah,
There's,
so yeah,
they do,
that makes
yeah.
sense, yeah.
They do stuff to people that no natural animal can do. If you feel like, okay, that's a rabid dog or that's a mean dog, like it might bite you, that's one thing. But even then, still, you don't feel, even though you know it's a bad dog, you don't feel an evil energy resonating from it.
No, because it's ultimately just a natural animal.
Right.
It's acting on its instincts. It's not evil. Yeah. I'm shift if you don't mind, I'd like to shift gears a little bit because there's one thing I didn't want to forget to ask you. We spoke before we were recording briefly about Kentucky and Tennessee also being dog man hotspots. And that made me think of a phenomena. Do you think there's any connection, or just what do you think about the Panthers, the Eastern Cougars, that, well, you know what I'm talking about, right?
The Black Panthers, like people seeing those.
People seeing Panthers, mountain lions, cougars in places where all the officials say they don't exist.
I think that in some cases, these creatures, or not creatures, some of them I believe that they are natural animals. I believe that our governments do sometimes lie about what is in our areas, or they don't know. I do believe that some of these maybe undiscovered North American species of large cats, wolves, dogs, or anything like that that's out there. They tell us that Alabama doesn't have wolves, but when you look at the history of it, Alabama used to have red wolves, and they say that they kill those all off to extinction. But I do feel like that some of these animals that at one point in time that I guess are extinct to this area are no longer in this habitat anymore. I think sometimes they migrate back. I do think that the wildlife people, the fish and game, and all those people, DNR, I don't think that they are out, they're out there quite a bit, but these animals are also crafty and they know you're there before you know that they're there. So I think they are elusive as well. So I do feel like that some of these animals are also released into the wild without people knowing about it or being told about it, maybe to keep down other varmints and other species of animals that they look at as pests to keep them down, but they don't want to get like an up public uproar about it. I do know that there are Black Panther sightings that have been seen around here, and there are pictures and videos in these states, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, all these different states, that there's videos and pictures of these things. So yeah, I think that some of these are natural animals that have just not been, what do you say, identified.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I kind of went down a rabbit hole on a conspiracy theory with this, that they had been reintroduced by the government just for the reasons you said, to control other animal populations. But the government didn't want the liability of having dumped off a bunch of cougars into the wild because sometimes they attack people. And there are people who are really into tracking them and getting photos and things like that. And it's just an interesting kind of side note, but they are, like, for example, some of the what they call melanistic panthers, because they're all kind of mountain lion, cougar, panther are essentially the same species, but some of them are just too big to be just a regular animal. And people see them in places where they're not supposed to exist.
When you say too big to be like a regular natural animal, as we know, have you seen pictures of some that you would say too big, and how big are we talking?
I don't have pictures. I have heard reports. Have you ever heard of the Penny Royale podcast?
No.
Okay, it's a really good podcast, and it's from Somerset, Kentucky. And people there were seeing a panther so large that, including the tail, it went all the way across the road, from like one end to the other. And that's like much larger than a natural panther.
Are you aware that there are people within the cryptid community who say that cat people also exist?
I had not heard of that. Huh. Very interesting.
I'll put you in contact with a lady who, she's one of about three women that I know of that actually say that they've seen these things before. And then you've got dogmen encounters where they say some of these dogmen have feline type appearance or characteristics about them, even down to their footprints.
Wow.
Some of the footprints, you know, they talk about the retractable claws. I don't know, do cats have a retractable claws? The dogs don't.
I believe that is the case, yes. In fact, I think that's why you have some people have their pet cat declawed, but not the dog. Yeah. Because the cat can like have its claws come out in a way that dogs can't. I believe that to be the case. I have not heard of the cat people before. That is an interesting thing. That is really fascinating.
Well, you know, and I know that like sometimes maybe some of the people on my shows, the viewers and stuff like that, they may feel like you're always bringing up the biblical aspect, or that's what I know. So it's easy for me to correlate and put it together like that, but there's people who are secular or agnostic or even atheists who believe different things that they believe about these different things. But biblically speaking, you have to look at it. If you're a Christian, that there is an answer for this stuff, because even in the Bible, they talked about the lion man of Moab. Lion man is a cat person today. Reptilian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, this stuff is not new. Biblically speaking, as the Bible says, there's no new thing under the sun, which means that these things have always been here. Most people are just not aware of it, and they think it's something new, that these things just came out of nowhere. But you got to think, what were the people who did these paintings and hieroglyphs and stuff like that, even from Greek mythology outside of Christianity or ancient Egypt? You got the cat woman Bastet. You know, you've got Anubis, that's a dog-headed man. St. Christopher is often depicted as a dog-headed man. I don't know if it was Christopher Columbus or DeSoto, one of them, when they came here, they talked about seeing dog-headed people.
Wow. Do you think there's any connection, and I'm just talking here, between the dogmen and the werewolf legends?
Yeah, I do. I do think there's a connection there.
Do you think there are people perhaps who, for lack of a better term, practice black magic and because the tradition was that you made a deal with the devil and got a special belt or something, and then you could become a werewolf. And, you know, I'm just speculating here. We're just, you know, just speculating on stuff.
There's nothing crazy. There's no crazy questions when it comes to these things. The fact that something like that exists in the first place is crazy in and of itself. I do think that in the sense of werewolves as we know it, as far as them, you know, you see the transformations in Hollywood movies and stuff like that. Do I believe that they do that? I don't know. But what I will say is that I do believe that a human can become a werewolf. I don't know to say so much become a werewolf, but to a degree, you got the different skinwalker legends and stuff like that, where they even say it's demonic, but these witch doctors or voodoo practitioners or people of the dark magic, black magic, stuff like that, I do feel like that they have to basically do certain sacrifices or sacrifice different family members or loved ones or friends in order to get those powers. In order to be able to do that, they have to do certain works in order to be able to transform into whatever creature that they want to be able to transform into. I've talked to a few people within the Native American community who have told me, one lady specifically told me that she watched her, I don't know if she said her father or her grandfather, actually transform into something else. You saw.
Wow.
I had a guy.
That would be incredible to see, you know.
Oh, it'd been terrifying to see.
There's yes.
Yeah. I know a guy who he's now a deliverance minister, but he's come out of that several years ago. He was on a documentary. They even had him on Sid Roth's show on Trinity Broadcast and Christian Network, where he used to be a high-level witch and voodoo practitioner. He's from Haiti, and I've actually spoken with this guy. He actually, when he was into that sacrificing people and all that, he was able to turn himself into whatever he needed to turn into in order to gain entrance into people's houses. So within the African culture, these things like turning into a werewolf or a vampire or anything like that, it's not strange. It's not looked upon as being a strange thing. It's commonplace for them. So if you were to deal with somebody like that, they will talk about this kind of stuff. They know about the succubus spirit and incubus, all of that. These things are real.
Since you happen to mention the incubus and succubus, correct me if I'm wrong, there seems to be kind of a sexual component to the dogman experience. It seems to me.
Can you expound on that?
Well, I think you had a kind of a controversial case that you were that you covered on your site, where a woman was stripped naked, and
yes.
they said she was killed by dogs, but dogs don't take people's clothes off. It doesn't work like that.
And absolutely, I don't know if you've heard the whole thing on that.
I have not.
Well, you need to, because this one is major. I've got the autopsy reports on it and everything. She was the second person on that particular road in that particular neighborhood. A man was killed first in April of last year in Cott County, Tennessee. They said unknown canine that killed this man. I have the autopsy reports on that, and as well as the lady. Her name was Amber Miller. And she was, all her clothes were stripped off of her. But it wasn't so much of a sexual component with it. It was more basically both her arms were ripped out of the socket.
Wow.
Where only muscles and tendons were holding it in place. She had 42% of tissue loss or flesh, 42% of flesh loss. She had bite marks all over her body. She had so many lacerations on her body that the people at the hospital, the nurses and the doctors, the medical staff lost count. She had a 15-inch bite mark that wrapped around from her stomach, upper hip area, that wrapped around all the way to the buttocks and upper thigh area below the buttocks. What has a bite span that big? That's not a regular dog.
No, there is no such dog that can do that. That's like an alligator or a shark bite. You know, that's something enormous. Absolutely.
And that's just one of several cases of attacks when it comes to these things. When you can say, now in that case, it actually goes on to say that there were, what did it say about that? There were multiple dogs that attacked this woman, unknown canine, but then you never brought in any canine and put down any canines or had any canines put to sleep. But then it's an open case, but you say it's canine. Well, why is it an open case? Why did other federal agents come over and completely take over that case? Why did they put a gag order on the medical staff, the paramedics, anybody who was on that case, I guess as jurors or whatever, they're under a gag order and that's still an open case. Well, the reason I keep getting back from people on why it's still an open case is because anytime it's an open case, people are not allowed to talk about it or ask questions about it, but no person was allowed to talk about it. But they have, some of them have actually talked about it. It's a lot of stuff with that. And that's just not the only thing. It's several things about it. I'll try to forward that autopsy report for both of them and let you see it. And
but yeah.
In neither one of those cases, no animals were put to sleep or taken down.
And that's amazing, because usually the local authorities handle that quite quickly. It's not hard to find, you know, the out of control animals that do stuff like that. I mean, that seems really weird. And then the feds get involved.
Yeah, I think they actually took over the case, and I don't remember. I don't think it was, what did they call it? It wasn't, you know, like the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation that took over. It was the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation
that
came in and they completely took over the case. Just like, you know, some of the cases where you have to look at some of these killings of these people when they are ripped to shreds, where there's not much explanation given to it. There was a couple of people who covered this case. Jeff Nadoni covered it extensively for several months. And so did another guy covered it also. He didn't cover it as extensively as Jeff did. I think he might have done one or two shows talking about it. But one thing that he shared in on his show was that when he was reading off the reports, and I'll send you that one too, he said that two of the largest canine footprints were found on the scene of Amber Miller where she was killed. Two of the largest canine footprints ever found canine bipedal.
Wow.
So it's a lot when it comes to this. And then
yes. I don't know,
it's so much stuff I have to catch you up on. I can't believe you hadn't heard some of this stuff. I'm sure you were already familiar with the Land Between the Lakes killings in the 1980s.
I have heard of. I don't know that much about it, but yes, Land Between the Lakes does. What I know of it is that apparently a whole family was wiped out, but
mm-hmm, family four,
and nobody knows much beyond that. Or let me put it, I don't know much beyond that, but it's never been solved, and it's never been like, here's the person that did it, or here's what happened, or anything.
There's some people who will talk about it, some people who know the deal behind it, some law enforcement officers who actually did come clean, or not come clean, but this is something that these people there know about. DNR knows about them, park rangers and stuff like that. They know about this stuff, but they know that they're not supposed to talk about it. It's a big cover-up when it comes to this stuff. Family
that,
of four was
that
still
I had
there.
Heard. There was some sort of law enforcement cover-up of what actually happened. And a family was wiped out. And what? Please go on.
Yeah, the family four was wiped out. It was the father, son, mother, daughter. The father, from what I heard, was killed first out there. The son, I think he had made it close back running, trying to get back to the RV. And it said that the dog man overtook him before he was able to get in it. Then the mother's body was found inside of the RV. Pretty much they said that it was like the worst crime scene they'd ever seen. It's like maybe as if somebody had taken a bucket of blood and just like pretty much just poured it over everything. Then they didn't know until they went further throughout the RV and they saw little girl's clothing in there. And throughout the RV, the little girl had been hiding in the back compartment of the RV, and I guess the dog man finally ended up getting to her, but they didn't see the little girl's body in there. So they knew that there's a little girl too at this point. The little girl is at this point, they're trying to figure out where is she. And they go out, and I don't know how far they go out into the woods or whatever, but they're all standing out there, and officers and I guess regular state officers and probably whoever these other people that came that showed up, these secret agents showed up. But while they're out there, the state trooper that was there who's standing underneath this tree, and all of a sudden got something dropping down onto his hat and dropping down onto his face. And he had blood and stuff dripping up down on him. They look up and this little girl's body is found 30 to 40 feet up in this tree, kind of, you know, kind of just draped over the branch.
Wow.
So that case, and then even still today, like I've interviewed eyewitnesses and people who don't want to come on the show, but have talked to me behind the scenes and have actually said that still to this day, there's still cases that's going on in the LBL right now. Well, we're having the conference at the Dogman Conference held and hosted by Josh Turner, on August the 12th and the 13th in Paris, Tennessee. It's only, I can't remember, 30 to 50 miles away from the LBL. And they're planning on actually going out there that night.
Oh, wow.
They asked me, I said, no, I won't be going out there with y'all.
Yeah, I'm not in any hurry to get on that one either, especially at night. Bringing up the physical aspect that these things can do some very brutal physical things, does it go the other way? Do you know of situations where they've been shot, where dogmen have been shot, and did it affect them like it would a physical being, or will you tell me?
Yes, they have been. There have been dogmen that have been shot and killed. It took a lot at times to take them out. I've watched so many and heard so many, but there's been times when people have killed them. There's been times when people have shot them, and I don't know if the rounds, I don't know too much about ballistics and guns and stuff like that, but there's been times when they say it should have taken it out because they've taken down bears and stuff with these things before, and it's like that when it hit them, it was nothing more than like a bee sting, like they didn't even flinch. They talk about how the dog man's bone structure or rib structure, whatever, is very, very, what do they call it, very dense, to the point where you have to get into the soft, fleshy tissue areas or get a headshot in order to take them out.
Wow.
So, yeah, they have been killed. It takes a lot, from what I've heard, unless you get the right shot to take them out. For the cases where, and they've also killed people as well. There's a lot to it.
Oh, yes.
I've watched so many hundreds of shows that there have been times when people have been killed and have actually come out to tell the story. On Jeff's channel, there's a guy on there, Luke from Taylor, Mississippi. Luke from Taylor, Mississippi was attacked. One got into his house, and I think he must live only a few miles down the road from his father. And his father heard gunshots going off at his son's house, and he jumps up out of the bed. He didn't even like take the time to get dressed. He came, ran down there, or drove down there in his boxer shorts to go see what was going on in his son's house. When he got there, the dog man was still in his room, and he fired off a few rounds, and of course the thing took off running out of the house. But this stuff is commonplace. They do attack people. They have attacked people, and a lot of times that once anybody comes out and talks about this, these agents come in and they completely tell them shut up. They sweep it under the rug. You saw a bear, you saw this, you saw that, or their careers are destroyed. So there's several different factors that's going on with the cover up with that. But yes, they have been killed.
Wow. Because to the best of my knowledge, Bigfoot has never been killed. They've never been able to kill a Bigfoot and like have its body. So because it doesn't seem to be affected by guns, but Dogman is. And yet you still have like a kind of a Men in Black type thing going on where it gets covered up and people get silenced. It's very strange. Correct me if I'm wrong on that Bigfoot thing, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait until we get off this interview, because when we get off of this interview, I'm going to send you a really, really interesting. If you're not, you know what, you need to go to Monster 911 YouTube channel. When you go to Monster 911 YouTube channel, Lance Hightower is the host of that show. And there is, I know for a fact, there's one in there that's very interesting. And I interviewed him on my show as well. And I asked him about this case. So I remembered it from when I heard it a few years ago. But a woman actually ended up killing one in her backyard. The whole entire story is on there. That lady's life, they tried to ruin her life behind that. She ended up having to leave her town. This guy who was a friend or neighbor of hers was questioned behind this case. So many different things happen with this that it's not even funny. Matter of fact, when I interviewed Lance Hightower on my show a few months ago, the powers that be completely commandeered my computer that night. He was telling some stuff to do if you feel like your phone calls are being watched or monitored.
Wow.
And while that was happening, everything went completely digital. The computer started malfunctioning. People in the live chat actually started to get removed and blocked and unsubscribed from my channel during this. It was blocking people, removing comments. I had no control over it, nor did my admin or mods. They had no control whatsoever.
So that is really wild, considering, you know, this is a pretty fringe topic. You know, you wouldn't think, if there was nothing to it, it wouldn't be being monitored like that, you know?
Oh, no, yeah. He was telling what to do if you feel like you're being, your conversations are being, you've got to see it. Monster 911, there's an episode. I'm going to send you some stuff. I'll tell you the people you need to reach out to, and I'll put you in direct contact with other people also that you need to talk to when it comes to some of these questions. These are people that's deep within it on the inside that can tell you way more from that end of the spectrum than I can tell you. And you're going to be completely mind-boggled and shocked and amazed at what you hear. It's crazy.
I look forward to hearing that. I'm very open to receiving that. That's really cool. If you don't mind, I got a couple of other questions. If you can keep going for a few minutes.
Yes, I can keep going for a few minutes.
All right. Let me know if you need to take a break or if you need to wrap it up. It's cool either way. But what are your thoughts, experiences, opinions, things you've heard about the little people, the fairies, the fae? Is that something that you've been involved with at all?
No, I don't know. I've heard a few people talk about them. Nobody ever really, from people I've been in interaction with, have spoken in depth about it enough for me to be able to give too much of an opinion on it. But I do know one of my admins of the group, he has stories about the little people from his grandparents. They've told him for years interactions with those. And there's a few people in the group who I've talked to as well that talk about fairies. I do believe that they exist. I mean, there's been skeletons of teeny, tiny, miniature humanoids that you can actually look it up, but that have actually been found with wings and all this kind of stuff. You see mermaids and all that stuff too. And it's not, when you look at it from the biblical aspect, none of this stuff to me at this point is too ridiculous to be true, because like I said, for me, the Nephilim theory covers all of it. It covers all of it. It covers the flesh and blood, and it covers the supernatural aspect of it as well. It's the only thing that for me makes sense, makes all this whole stuff make sense. And it's all intertwined and connected.
And I definitely want to give you a chance to fully elaborate that theory. I just want to get a couple of things off before I, you know, just a couple of notes I made. And then, yes, I really want you to talk about the Nephilim, because I find it a fascinating concept.
It is. I'm going to do a show on that soon.
I look forward to that. I ask about the fairies because of something that my wife was told in rural Mississippi by her mother, that about the sprites. And if you ever are out working, picking berries, especially picking berries, but if you're ever out doing farm work and you hear something calling your name, don't go over there. And don't go off into the woods by yourself, because the sprites will take you. And I later learned that that was a almost universal like belief, and I was kind of surprised at that.
Well, Hollywood movies makes it like fairies are these pleasant little pretty little pixies and nothing to worry about, the fairy godmother and all that kind of stuff. But what I've heard of the little people, or even the fairies, or the fae as some call them, they are not this peaceful loving entity. They can be very wicked or very evil. That you're
oh
not,
yes
you have to be careful of being.
You want to be very careful, and you really want to avoid their company if at all possible. One last thing, well, maybe if you don't mind, two last things. Do you have any experience with or thoughts on UFOs?
Yes, I had. And some people may, you know, once they hear this recording, may feel some type of way about it and look at it like Christians think that everything is demonic or everything is evil. And I just don't. I can't. I did have a UFO sighting. I've seen them for years also. But I had one up close and personal encounter in 1994. 1993 or 94, I was about 14 years old, and my sister comes in the house, and back then, I liked watching sightings, unsolved mysteries, or any of those strange shows like
that. Oh, yes.
So I've always loved watching that stuff. So when one day my sister came in there, and I think I might have been watching something like that then, laying on the couch. My sister came in, and she was like, "Tina, come out here quick. You got to see this." I was like, "What is it?" She said, "Come out quick." I said, "I don't want to come out there right now. Come out. You definitely want to see this." So I went out, and when I got outside, I could not believe what I was looking at. I was looking at a UFO that was hovering above my neighbor's house, directly across the street from my parents' house, across from that lattice driveway. And you just walked. It was so low that if I had actually took a ladder and climbed on top of that house, I could have stood up and took a rock and threw it at it. That's how low it was to this house. And it hovered above the house for about anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. I wasn't the only one who seen it. My parents saw it. My sister saw it. And everybody who lived on that end of the neighborhood who was outside all came out to look at this thing. It was luminescent, kind of yellowish luminescent with red and green lights strobing around it continuously. And then as it started to get dark, because I think this may have been probably 6-7 o'clock at night in the summertime, and it starts to get dusk. So after about 15 to 30 minutes, it went from being right there hovering above the house to lifting up a little higher, and then all of a sudden it shoots out like at Mach speed and winks out. And
it's wow. Gone.
Yeah, so that's
were the people home who are in that house?
Yeah, they were outside looking. Yeah, they were outside looking at it too.
Oh, okay. So, wow.
Everybody on that end of the neighborhood was outside looking at this. Everybody
saw it. I was just, wow, that is really something.
And just like straight out of a Hollywood movie, this white guy pulls up in an old pickup truck, comes peeling into the neighborhood and screeches tires and stops at the stop sign. And everybody looks over at him. He's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this. I've been following that thing around for 15, 20 minutes. It was over my house." Like, he was saying it was over his house like so many minutes ago, and he couldn't believe what he was looking at. So people in the neighborhood got to calling the police department, calling Huntsville International Airport, and calling Redstone Arsenal to try to find out, y'all have special planes or special, special operations or whatever going right now. And everybody was like, "No, there's nothing going on." People out there outside was trying to rationalize it and say, "Well, is it a blimp?" "No, it's not a blimp. You know what a blimp is like? It looks nothing like a blimp. When was the last time you saw a blimp shoot out at Mach speed and wink out?"
And hang around over somebody's house, you know? Mm-hmm. They really don't do that. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people called it in. Did anybody ever come around asking about it? Or did it just get kind of written Mm-mm. off? Very interesting. That is really, wow. That is something else. I had one thing I wanted to ask you about. There's one cryptid that I've always...
My phone went out.
Oh, no problem. I was just saying there's one cryptid I've always wanted to ask you about. The Chupacabra. Because that seems to me like a thing that might have been created in the government lab. And that was kind of... There are like... A lot of this stuff goes back centuries, goes back to the Bible, goes back thousands of years. The Chupacabra seems like it might have been made in a lab. And I don't think there's any Chupacabra sightings pre-1990. And I just wondered if you had anything on that. And you may not. I mean, it's very different from other stuff.
Well, it depends on what aspect you're talking about, because they have what is known in like Puerto Rico as a Chupacabra. It looked like some kind of gargoyle type thing with red eyes and just a strange looking creature, you know, a gargoyle type creature, something weird like that. But then here in the United States, where people would call a chupacabra was something that looked like maybe a coyote with manes that had this whole, you know, I can't
oh,
think
yes.
kind of
There's
low
been,
to it, like kind of like a hyena.
There's been a number of fake chupacabras that have been identified as either a raccoon or a dog or a coyote that just lost all its fur. And they look weird as can be without that. It just seems strange. And so much of this stuff seems like it's genetic manipulation, which I feel very strongly that not only can be done, but is done. I know that about 20 years ago, Harvard University was having a discussion of whether it'd be ethical to like combine human and mouse DNA to create this human mouse hybrid that they could study for to research brain cancer. And they were talking about, well, how far along the development from a fertilized egg to an embryo, how long can you let that go on before you can't have that thing come into the world? And to me, if they were talking about that in 20 years ago in an Ivy League university, the government's already doing stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. You know, Phil Schneider talked about the different things running these deep underground military bases that were going on, that different types of alien type creatures. Some people call these dogman or Bigfoot aliens. And that's just one theory. It's just so much when you look at it. It's not normal. But maybe it is normal. I think maybe it's one of those things that we just have not learned to accept yet, because all of a sudden everybody's got a cell phone now, social media. You're seeing more of these things because now people have camera phones who at one point in time we didn't have that. So it wasn't out there as much. People are feeling more open now to talk about their sightings and encounters to the point that it's not taboo to talk about anymore. But I think that these things are out there. I think that they can pick and choose who to leave alone or who to deal with. But it's just a huge picture. Once people stop putting Dogman and Bigfoot or any other cryptids in a box and try to learn, you can't just say straight up that they're only 100% flesh and blood, because the other aspects of them cloaking and their supernatural speed and their ability to cloak and all that other stuff, that doesn't go with a natural animal. So I do feel like they're genetically being manipulated also, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the genetic manipulation can be today, and it could also be ancient. And there, I kind of wanted to ask you to just kind of elaborate on the Nephilim.
Okay, so in Genesis 6, it says the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men and took wives of all that they chose. So the creation behind that, it goes on to say that they were mighty men of old, men of renown. When you say mighty men, you got mighty men, you got men of renown, men of great stature, and some biblical versions, some say giants. When you look at the sons of God in the Old Testament, they were not Christians yet. Christ had not come yet at that point, if you're biblically speaking, or if you're a Christian, Christ didn't come yet. So at that point, the sons of God were only spoken of as the angels. So the angels came in. And when it said they took wives of all they chose, well, according to what Christianity is, taken as a wife, that meant sex, because you were only, according to the Bible, like any time that you come into a woman, or you're, it's basically saying it in the most pleasant terms, is basically sex is for a husband and a wife. So these fallen angels came in, and once you have relations with a human, well, two humans, men of renown, like you just look at it like they were a celebrity, they were a superstar. At what point in time has that ever created a giant today? So they're not talking about something yes, natural. Even in yes, Greek mythology, no. Greek mythology, you had the gods, or demigods or whatever you want to call them, Anunnaki or whatever, it came in and they procreated with human women, and the result of that was a giant. All cultures have that. The Epic of Gilgamesh, you look into the Book of Enoch, the Book of Enoch goes in greater detail. Well, one thing I left out about Genesis 6, God wanted to destroy the earth. All creation had corrupted as well up on the earth. If it, so I used to wonder, because he even destroyed the birds and the fish and the animals that walk on the land. Well, how did they corrupt their way on the earth? Well, it wasn't that they corrupted their way. These fallen angels came in and they corrupted their DNA. And as a result, if you got a human woman and a fallen angel, and the creation behind that is a giant humanoid or human or superhuman, then what do you think is going to happen if you take that fallen angel DNA or Anunnaki DNA or alien, whatever you want to call it, and then you splice that and put that together with an animal, a wolf? So now you got a dog man, you got Anubis now, you got you know, the Greek mythology, the Minotaur, satyrs.
Oh, yes, the Minotaur, yeah.
Most people don't even know that in the Book of Isaiah, King James Version, it actually mentions satyrs. That's in the King James Version. Now, we call that goat man today.
Yes, yes. A literal, actual goat man, yes.
Mm-hmm. The reptilian that spoke to Eve in the Garden of Eden. It's punishment. If you don't know, if you hadn't really dug into it, I didn't understand it all those years ago, but I understand it now more. But that's the first reptilian encounter right there. Because the curse that was put upon that serpent that deceived Eve, God told him, because you deceived Eve, now you will be cursed to crawl on your belly for the rest of your days. Okay, so now looking back on it, looking at it now from what I know now. Okay, so before, at that point in time, it wasn't crawling on its belly, number one. Number two, it was talking to Eve. So it's not, you know, a regular serpent or a snake or alligator. They can't talk. They don't even have the right vocals or anything like that. The way their mouth is even set up, they're not able to talk. This serpent was able to have a whole discussion with her. She didn't find that strange that a snake that's crawling on the ground is talking to her. No, it wasn't like that. I think that if the main thing that let me know that's a reptilian, and this is just my theory and I believe it because I'm just rationalized. I don't just listen to encounters or shows just for entertainment purposes as I once did. You got to make sense of it. That creature, that being, was actually speaking to her. I feel like it was upright at that point. And I feel that that serpent basically was a reptilian, what we would call a reptilian today. But because of that, then God cursed it and put it to crawling on its belly for the rest of the day. So that's the serpent or the snake that you have today.
And the pictures always show like a boa constrictor or something. Mm-hmm. But that's after the punishment. The thing that she's talking to hasn't been punished yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, some wow. people on the agnostic standpoint of it say that the fruit in the middle of the garden, you look at the fruit in the middle of the garden, okay, could that be hypothetical or could that be metaphoric? Some people say that the fruit in the middle of the garden, or if you think of some of these songs like Secret Garden, or you look at some of these, some of the pornographic websites, they have a depiction of a woman, somewhat nude, biting out of an apple. That is the forbidden fruit. Sex is the forbidden fruit. They had not had sex or started having children. They hadn't had Cain and Abel yet. They didn't even know that they were naked. The forbidden fruit was.
Yes, those are really, that's always been a very strange mm-hmm. thing for me, being somewhat, I'm not bragging it up, but a little bit familiar with the Bible, that yes, they were unaware of sexuality at all. Mm-hmm. And they were unaware of nudity, their own bodies. And yes, it seems like there's
mm-hmm.
a real component there. Yeah, there is. It's something that needs some deep interpretation that I have not come across yet.
Well, a lot of people say, you know, in some of the older, what do you call it, apocryphal books, Eve wasn't even Adam's first wife, that Lilith was his first wife. I don't know if Lilith is even brought up in the Bible, but she is brought up in some of the agnostic books, or not agnostic, apocryphal books.
Oh,
There's
yes.
66 books taken out of the Bible, and she's brought up in there. Now, it also goes on to explain that when Cain killed Abel, he was sent out into the land of Canaan, and he went and found a wife. Well, how is that? How did he go find a wife when
That's
Adam and Eve had
always
kids?
that, yes, quite a question.
Yeah, so it's just, there's a lot of stuff that they put in, and there's a lot of stuff that they took out. Why take out all these things? The Book of Enoch goes in greater detail and telling you a lot of this stuff. It's a lot of stuff to it, and it somewhat, in some ways, makes you question everything we've ever been taught.
Oh yes, I mean there's a lot there. Without going on trying to make this 4 hours long, but yeah, there's a lot there. And yeah, Lilith was a deep belief by the Hebrew people for a long, long time. And to this day, devout Jewish people cover the mirrors because, or don't have mirrors because they're afraid that she'll come out of the mirror. And that's, I mean, it's a folk belief, but it's a real belief.
Oh yeah, they also say that Lilith is supposed to be like the spirit of sexuality. She's also known as the succubus spirit. Also, it's a lot of stuff when you cover it, and it takes a lot of years, extensive research, and pulling up other texts and other books and stuff like that, and then the apocryphal books to kind of compare notes and sources and all this kind of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that could come out of this, and so we could probably go on and on for days about this, because it's not it's this is stuff is all intertwined. When I have you on the show, we'll delve deeper into some of that stuff. I will be doing a Nephilim series soon,
Oh,
and
that
I'm gonna
sounds great.
include some more stuff. I'm gonna try to get some people in on this. I did talk to a couple of people who have researched the Anunnaki. People don't know that in the Book of Numbers, the Anunnaki are mentioned in the Book of An of the Book of Numbers 13:33, when Moses sent the spies over into the land of Canaan, it said that the guys who came back to make a report to him, Jacob, and I can't remember some of the other names right now, but came back to give him a report of the inhabitants of the land there, and they told him, we saw the sons of Anak there. Well, you know what, within our English language today, it's broken up from like ancient Greek and some ancient Hebrew, ancient Latin, and all that kind of stuff. So I said, the sons of Anak. He said, the people that were there were so huge, we were as grasshoppers in their sight. They were telling Moses, we can't defeat these people. This is God that sent them there. This is your land. I'm giving you the land of milk and honey, but you're gonna have to go over there and conquer these people. You can do it. But they came back and told Moses, no, we were as grasshoppers in their sight. So
Wow.
you know that they call the Anunnaki giants. They were depicted as giants. Then you look at the word Anunnaki, then they were referenced in the Bible as the sons of Anak. And when I talked to Jack Carey once, I asked him, are the Anak and Anunnaki one and the same? And he said, yes, they are. I've heard other people say that too, and I've actually Googled it and looked it up before, but there's a correlation there. This stuff is not brand new. Ancient texts
Oh.
have the information. Why do you think the Catholic Church has a lot of these books and stuff like that that we're not privy to, and it's hidden away in different libraries and other ancient texts all over the world? Everybody's seen these things. You're not going to pick something and write it or paint it on a cave wall, something that you've never ever seen. They've seen this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, the bones of giants have been found all over the United States. And either taken away to museums and disappeared, or they just weren't interested in bones and threw them away so we can build this road or whatever, build the bank. But yeah, there, I mean, the evidence for giants worldwide is compelling,
Oh, yeah.
all over the place. That's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of stuff to this.
We've covered a lot of ground tonight, Bettina. I'm thinking of wrapping it up at this point.
Okay. We're going to cover more when we talk on my show as well. We'll bring
Oh, I
this
really look
back.
forward to that. Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Where can people get a hold of you? What's the best means to hear what you have to say?
The best way to get in touch with me would be, I have a group on Facebook and it's called Crypto Normal Encounters with BMOS, Crypto, CryptoNormal, Normal, NORMAL. That's one word, Crypto Normal Encounters with BMOS. I'll send the link to Vincent and he can post that in the link to this video, or I'm
Yes, I'll
also,
put it in the show notes.
yes, and I'm also on Facebook. As well, that's the group. I'm Bettina Moss on Facebook, and you can reach out to me on Messenger, anything like that, if you want to share an encounter. But we will be collaborating more often. So, if y'all need to get in touch with me, you can't find the group, then just he's going to share it, and I will go further from there. And I'm willing to help anybody and talk to anybody about any of the information I have about these creatures or beings that I know.
All right. Well, hey,
Oh, I
thank.
forgot to mention,
Oh, go
Vincent.
ahead.
Also, the Facebook group, like I said, Crypto Normal Encounters with BMOS, and my YouTube channel is also the exact same name, Crypto Normal Encounters with BMOS. I do live interviews on Fridays, so anyone's interested and want to share your encounters or experiences, or you want to join the group, just remember the name of the group, and we'll go from there.
Sounds great. And I've got to give a personal plug here that her live casts are pretty wonderful, and you should definitely tune in and be a part of that because it's cool as hell.
No, thank
See,
you.
hey, thank you, Bettina, for being here tonight. We've covered a lot. I can't wait to be on your show. And all the folks who are listening, thank you very much for listening. This is the weird part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell. This has been my special guest, Bettina Moss. Thank you and good night.
Good night, everyone.